All right, it is 93.7 WEEI. Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson, we got Stiz Jackson, of course, our man Terp here in studio, and I'm just going to mention this, and we're not even going to play it, but, you know, the whole Stephen A. Smith, Nick Wright calling Stephen A. Smith like a wannabe mobster, saying, you know, what are you, threatening people? And then, of course, Stephen A. Smith kind of does the same thing back to Nick Wright. Like, I know the people you run with. Don't make me say what I know about you and your gang. And then
Jaylen Brown, be careful what you wish for.
What was that all about?
It was just him just trying. Just say what you know. Say it. What are we doing here? And then I'm not going to play it right now because it's really becoming ridiculous. But Nick Wright just, like, told Stephen A. Smith that he needed to apologize. What was it, Stiz? He needed to apologize.
Can I give you the Cliff Notes real quick?
Sure.
I promise. Less than 5 seconds.
Okay, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I do not know better, and I am not ashamed of myself.
There you go.
Okay. So he's saying that Stephen A. Smith needs to apologize or correct himself or some kind of garbage.
You know, that's the thing, though. This is exactly what they want.
Oh, yeah.
Just us talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's all about.
It's like, you know what it is? It's two guys. It's two guys in a room with a cracker. That's what it is. Pants off and a cracker. They're all just having the time of their lives. Talk about me. No, talk about me. Oh, yes, talk about me. There goes the cracker.
Like, after the Jaylen responded on the Twitch, he got like a 9-minute segment out of that.
Yeah. Oh,
Stephen
yeah.
A. just monologuing, looking dead at the camera, making like empty threats to Jaylen.
Well,
like, that's exactly what he wants.
Stephen A. lives in like a booth with green screen behind it and never leaves. He just talks, and somehow it's on 18 different YouTube shows.
He's supposed to be doing journalism.
Stephen A., Stephen B., Stephen C., and now we're going to talk at MIT and bore everyone with my fantastic just backtracking when I finally get face-to-face with Stephen A. Smith like he did that one time. You know, you're taking the world by storm with your podcast. I thought you were angry. All right. So let's talk about Jaylen Brown in a basketball way and not in a, like, tattletale telephone type deal. So there was a story that came out from Mark Stein. And Mark Stein is a very good reporter. He seems to kind of have a decent idea about
what's
going
on. He had the Porzingis thing last year.
Oh,
when
Porzingis, that was Mark Stein?
Yeah, that was him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, give him all the credit in the world then. But he's very connected. And he said right now there's two teams that are believed to be in on Giannis, the Celtics one, and then the Heat. But the Jaylen Brown stuff I found to be the most interesting.
But real quick on that,
yeah.
The way he phrased it was, those are the teams that most intrigue Giannis, not necessarily that they're in on. So in other words, Giannis is intrigued by Miami and Boston.
Okay.
That's where he wants to go.
Okay.
According to Stein.
That's kind of important, I guess.
Yeah.
He's been vocal about wanting to stay on the East Coast so he can get to Greece when he needs to, like, in case of emergencies or whatnot.
Well, that fly Spirit, but that's out now.
That's out. Yeah, that's no longer.
Can't do that anymore. And then Jaylen Brown, according to Mark Stein, right now there is interest from the Houston Rockets, one team that is closely monitoring the situation here with Boston. And when it comes to what they're willing to offer, what are you hearing?
I mean, honestly, not much. This is all just kind of from the outside. Like, the Celtics keep everything really kind of close to the vest here with what they want to do. And Jaylen Brown mentioned on his stream that he was going to meet with the front office this week, but that's kind of standard practice for everything. So, I mean, if there is to be a Giannis trade, it's not going to be a two-team deal. This will be a three-team deal. And that's why there is some merit to this, and there is some intrigue around this that, you know, you look at teams like Houston. Like, Jaylen Brown obviously has a good relationship with Ime Udoka. That's a team that's had a lot of success. Didn't this year, but Kevin Durant really wasn't available. And we'll see what they do with Kevin Durant, because that whole thing was kind of a disaster last year for him. I know he was all NBA, but right around the All-Star break, he's got exposure having like a burner, calling out players and all that, and he wasn't available for the postseason. So if there is to be a trade that lands Giannis in Boston, it's going to be a three-team deal. And you look at teams like Portland, look at teams like Houston. Atlanta obviously makes a ton of sense with Jaylen being from Atlanta. But I kind of wonder about Portland, because their owner is doing everything he can possibly do to cut costs. Does he really want to bring in like a $60 million player? Like,
yeah.
I'd be interested to see that whole thing.
So I'm sorry. So because am I mistaken? So what you're saying is that this deal that involves Houston would send Alperen Sengun, is it Alperen?
Alperen Sengun.
Yeah, Sengun. It would send him to up to the Bucks, and then Giannis would be here. It's not Sengun coming to Boston for
Stein didn't have any players in there, so a lot of that's just kind of people online getting in the trade machine and trying to kind of figure out their own kind of alternatives, but he didn't report any kind of players or any draft capital going back and forth. So all that speculation.
But as far as him monitoring it, I mean, it seemed to me that he was speculating that there could just be a direct trade, not a three-team trade with Houston involving Jaylen Brown, correct?
To me, I mean, yeah.
The way that I read it,
it was kind of
like,
open-ended, the report there. But, I mean, possibly, but like, I'd imagine that would be in a trade to facilitate Giannis, because I don't think there's anyone really on Houston that the Celtics look at and say, this player is worth giving up Jaylen Brown, who just had a top six season in the NBA.
If you're getting rid of Jaylen, what profile of player would you want the Celtics to get in return?
A guy like Giannis. But I really do have a lot of...
Gets to the rim.
That's the big thing. And Jaylen does that. Like, he led the league in drives last year. Like, so Jaylen isn't necessarily one of those guys. Top 10 in free throw attempts, and that's a correlation with him getting downhill.
Yep.
It's just looking at what him and Tatum have been able to accomplish as a duo, right? 5 conference finals, 2 NBA finals, 6 50-win seasons. Like, they have the most wins since coming into the NBA together, since becoming a duo, rather. Most conference finals appearances, tied for the second most NBA finals appearances. Like, it works with these two. Mm. It's about complementing the players around them. And, you know, there are definitely pros and cons with Giannis. Like, prior to last year, he's finished top 4 in MVP voting 7 straight years. Like, when he's healthy, he's one of the best players in the world. But you worry about his durability, and since they won the title in Milwaukee, his teams have very badly fallen off. So you kind of worry about that as well. So there are pros and cons to it, and I can kind of see both sides.
What'd you think of Miles Turner calling him out for being the last one on the plane when they would leave? He was started off talking about Doc Rivers and then kind of started
how
ripping
Doc
on
Doc wouldn't find anybody, and like Giannis would just show up when he wanted.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't there, like, the plane would just wait. Like, I wouldn't want a player like that if I were the Celtics.
See, that's exactly what we were talking
about.
That's
how I'd look at it.
There's too many red flags.
You're not going to get away with that stuff here with the Celtics. Like, you might get away with that with Milwaukee, where you're like arguably the best player they've ever had in franchise history. Like, of course they're going to do everything they can to accommodate you, but the Celtics aren't going to do that. Like, if you're told the plane leaves at 2:05, you're there 1:35, to like well before then. We're not waiting the plane on the runway for Giannis to show up at his leisure. Like, that's ridiculous.
Here, the problem here, you can hear it in Terp's voice. He and Scal have gotten together in Forsberg, and they are all team slingshot. They all want to run it back, cut payroll, and slingshot it in 2 years. This is like the tier one philosophy. I don't understand why.
Give me the wet dream of the slingshot crew. Like, what are they saying the best case scenario is? Walk me through it.
I'm not necessarily team slingshot.
I know you might know, but walk me through what they're all talking about, like what they're imagining happening with this slingshot.
It would look similar to the 2023 offseason when they got Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis. Like, big splashes like that.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what players they have in mind there, because I think there are changes that can be made to this team that can make you a contender this year. Like, you have avenues to do that. Like, they're not that far off. I really don't think they are. When you look at the Eastern Conference, like, they had no business losing to Philadelphia. Absolutely no business.
It's true.
But if you get a supporting cast, a stronger supporting cast, and I think you can do that while also staying under the tax, because staying under the tax, you reset the repeater penalties, and then you can do them. You can be in there for the next 5 years, right? But the most common way to duck the tax is doing it in consecutive years. Like, any team that's really ever done it in recent history have just done it in 2 consecutive years, because it makes no sense to duck the tax, then go back in, and then duck it again to duck the repeaters. It just doesn't make sense. So mostly you do it all back-to-back years, and I think that's what they're going to end up doing. I think it makes the most sense and sets them up for the financial future, where you can really invest in this team. Now, if we get to the year after and we're trading guys away for tax reasoning and whatnot, then you can be like, okay, you probably shouldn't be owning the Boston Celtics if you're going to be doing that. But for now, you can see the path and you can see the vision as to why they're doing it.
Terp, I was saying earlier that as a Celtics fan, you should be rooting for the Knicks to win the whole thing, and that is because it's got to be embarrassing if you are the Celtics front office to take a look and go, all right, if we're going to have to compete with that team for the like near future, we better sink some assets into it. We better make some big, bold moves. Because I just think that I don't want them to get lazy and think that what they have is good enough, when in your own division could be a team that could win it all.
It's funny, because there's a lot of irony with that, because when the Knicks assembled this core they have now with Mikal Bridges, with OG Anunoby, with Karl Anthony Towns, with beating the Celtics and loading up with those wings and a big that can stretch the floor, that was trying to emulate what the Celtics did in 23, 24. You were trying to load up and try to compete with those guys. So for the Celtics to now do what the Knicks did and try to match that roster, there'd be some real irony in that. And I totally believe it. Like, you're looking at it again, they had no business losing to Philadelphia. Like, that is an epic collapse. And people try to still pass this season off as success. Like, come on. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. Both things can be true, that you had excellent internal development. You saw guys take steps, but you blew a 3-1 lead against a team you had no business losing to. And then you see what the Knicks did, obviously, to Cleveland. What they did in the second round as well. Like, you look at all these teams, it's like they could have beaten anyone in the East. Maybe
By
I
no
don't
means
think they were beating
was a season of failure.
Yes.
I disagree.
Yeah, I would totally disagree with that. All right, so do you think that this is the type of organization, when they see the Knicks playing as well as they are, that they would respond in that way?
I think they respond when things go poorly for them. I think looking back at the 2023 season, when they lost to Miami, they fall down 0-3, come back, lose game 7 at home. That's when they prompted the Porzingis and the Holiday moves. You shake up that core. You trade away Marcus Smart. That's what happened then. Like, now you have something, not necessarily at that level, because that was the conference finals and it was a lot. That was a really, really bad series, falling down 0-3 to an 8 seed. Miami was an 8 seed that year.
Yeah,
like, at least Philadelphia is talented, and maybe, you know, them being a play-in team isn't necessarily reflective of the talent they have, because Paul George was suspended, Joel Embiid was hurt for most of the year. Maybe that was a little bit different. But the 8 seed in Miami Heat, falling behind 0-3 and then losing a game 7 at home, that prompted those moves. And Wick Grosbeck, actually, Wick Grosbeck told the story on these airways with the Greg Hill Show. He's like sitting there watching it. He's like, we're not running it back with this team again. Like, something has to change. And maybe with the future in mind, like, they wait another year to do that. But there are going to be some moves. Like, just listen back to the Brad Stevens press conference. Like, he was furious. Like, there was anger
was
in his voice.
Oh, like, darn tootin', I am just
pissed. It's the same.
I'm pissed.
Two guys.
He was.
Same two guys, though, that were here in 2023 that are
point,
that blew it this year.
Yeah, I just, point. It's so, a 2-year fail.
I do wonder, like, what the ceiling was for the Celtics, because Jason Tatum was not healthy, right? This guy was coming off a torn Achilles. Like, no one was really sure if he was even going to play. No one was even sure if he was going
to
play.
They looked pretty damn good at the end of the season, though.
They did. But he was still in the return to play protocol. And that's why he didn't play in a game 7.
Like, how about
that? Now that he has a full offseason to ramp up and get back into real NBA shape or return to the player he was, that's the best addition they're going to make all offseason, a fully healthy Jason Tatum.
How about this? Can we get an adult in the room? Because that was the one great thing about having Al Horford. Like,
Drew Holiday.
Exactly. Yes. It was the veteran leadership that you needed. And when right now your veteran leader is challenging Stephen A. Smith to debates at MIT and running his mouth saying this was one of his favorite seasons, that's not the kind of person you want in that locker room to be setting the tone.
No, I agree. I think I was looking at a lot of, like, the postseason games this year and thinking, like, what if they had an Al Horford? Like, what if they had a Drew Holiday? Because, like, I think the impact of those guys get overlooked a little bit, and, like, especially with the 2024 team, because they're just blowing everyone out. But, like, Drew Holiday probably should have won Eastern Conference Finals MVP against the Pacers. Like, he definitely should have won it, like, with the statistical averages, with the plays he made, the steal on Nembhard in Game 3, the offensive rebound in Game 4 that allowed them to ice the game. Al Horford was awesome in that Game 5 against Cleveland. He was their starting center for almost the entire run. Like, if you have a guy like that, that just kind of, like, that calming presence, that has that veteran know-how, I think it goes a long way. But at this point, shouldn't that be Tatum and Brown?
Thank you.
Jalen's going into his 11th year. Jason's going into his 10th.
Who's the flag carrier for OKC?
SGA.
Okay, and he's a dog, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what about for San Antonio?
Well, that's Victor Wembanyama.
All right, who's so 22? Their best players are the ones that set the tone. Our best player, no, we got to bring in role players to set the tone.
You know what they are, though.
Come on.
But, Ted, we know what they are. Tatum is not that kind of leader. Tatum is great on the floor. Tatum is an excellent player. And as far as, like, his style of play, fantastic. Maybe he's a leader on the floor, but he's not an emotional leader. He's not someone like an Al Horford who will get in your face if you're not doing something right, or like a Drew Holiday who just is the veteran presence that does everything right off the court as well. And Jalen absolutely is not that guy. So isn't it weird? We happen to have two great players, but neither of them are the adult in the room.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. Let me ask you a question. The Knicks, 25 points in the first half off of fast breaks. You got the Oklahoma City and San Antonio that just attack. What do you watch when you watch these teams that are still playing stylistically? What should the Celtics learn from these teams?
Force turnovers. They've been trying to do this for years, like, really since Joe took over. They've done a great job of taking care of the basketball, but they don't really capitalize on it because they don't force any turnovers. Like, that's been one of the biggest things, and that was a priority that they had over the offseason coming into this year, was to try and force more turnovers, and they did it for like 2 weeks, and then that was it. Like, they still finished towards the bottom in turnovers this year. Like,
you know, it's not pace, it's not, I don't know.
I mean, pace is kind of misleading because it really depends on the shots you're getting. So everyone looks at the pace number, but that's really kind of misleading. Like, you can play fast in the half court too. Like, if you're playing in the half court, like if you're moving around, you have a lot of motion in your offense. Like, you can play fast and it won't register as a quick pace, you know, because it's about the shots you're taking. So I think pace is a little misleading. Like, I didn't necessarily have a problem with the pace they played with last year. And I think one step they made last year that was tremendous was their offensive rebounding. Like, they were one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the league. That's kind of why they were able to be so dominant in the regular season. But they didn't really force enough turnovers. Like, if you can force more turnovers, I think this team would be in a much better spot.
All right, so Terp, first of all, we're in the Ketches Law Injury Attorney's studio. No fee unless you win. I want to play a clip for you because not only do I think this is unbelievably ill, like the worst thing you could possibly say as a coach, but also I don't understand what the F he means. And I know that you know all like about the statistics of basketball, and you know coaches speak because you interview them. Can you play the Kenny Atkinson clip from the other day? So this is after game 3, and Kenny Atkinson this is the coach of the Cavs, was being asked about what he thought of his team's play so far. And he says something so unbelievably tone deaf. But not only is it tone deaf, I don't know what the F he's talking about. Could you explain this clip to me?
Analytically, I think we've won the I said 3 out of 3. We're 2 out of 3 in the expected. I don't know if you guys follow that. There's an expected score, you know, and we won 2 out of 3. And I know you're looking confused, but there is really, you know, if you believe in process and all that, like, man, up. So, you know, take that layer. Us shooting way below expected, them shooting way over. You know, and I know no one wants to hear that. I think you guys like hearing it. I know, you know, general public, no one wants to hear that. Everyone's outcome-based. And, you know, sure, I get that too.
Okay, let's put aside the fact that his team was down 3-0. And then he says, analytically, we've won 3, you know, at least 2 out of 3 games. And then after that is nonsense to me. What is he talking about? We've beat them in expected score. And what the hell is he even mentioning there?
First of all, he's absolutely right. No one wants to hear that when you're down 3-0 in the conference finals, especially the general public. And I'm not sure he said, like, the you guys as the beat writers want to hear it. I don't even think they want to hear it. Like, they want results as well. Everyone wants you to see results. No one really cares about these. And the NBA teams, they have these internal metrics that have, like, the expected shot percentage and all this, and they probably add all those up, and it's like your expected points were greater than their expected points based off whatever shots you're kind of taking and different percentages, which there's a whole bunch of nonsense that goes into it.
Yeah.
But to be referencing that when you're down 3-0 is insane. And he lended himself to just so much easy jokes and stuff because everyone's like, well, analytically, they didn't get swept. And analytically, like, there's a game 5 tomorrow or whatever. Like,
yeah.
It's just... That was a ridiculous comment.
Have you ever been caught in, like, a lie when you were a kid and you're standing in front of your parents and you just start rambling because you don't know what to say? It's like your brain goes into autopilot mode and words just come out of your mouth. That's what that sounded like.
Just take some damn accountability. You were up 22 in the fourth quarter of game 1. That's where the series was lost. I think everyone watching that series was like, okay, that if they win this game, there's a chance. But if they blow this one, you blow a 22-point lead in game 1, you could have swung home court. Like, that was it. Once you blew that series, it was over.
But they're bringing it back, Turp. It's shocking. Yeah. The reports today, they're bringing Atkinson back. They're going to bring Harden back on a new deal. Which you got to give this to the NBA, Rich. Like, it's an interesting offseason. Hockey's kind of boring now. Free agency happens, but there are no, like, big fish.
Yeah.
But we might have, like, Anthony Davis move. LeBron, your guy's going to move somewhere. But the Cavs and all this are going to run it back? What are they thinking?
I mean, I think that's more so, like, that Mitchell respects the hell out of Kenny Atkinson. I think that's it. James Harden the same way. Like, that core really
likes
him.
Who cares what James Harden wants?
And I also,
like, that's the thing.
That's
is that, boy, James Harden is like Mr. Pick and Choose, and, like, it's always somebody else's fault. But for some reason, these teams fall over for this guy. And one organization after the next, he just ruins. And it's like he leaves in his wake a bunch of failed teams.
He might be the answer to guy, like, most talented, quote unquote, who have never won, currently playing.
No. That guy, he gives up.
I'd say currently. Yes.
You think he's the most talented to never
currently,
win?
Currently not Luka, to win.
Like, Luka's more talented.
Well, Luka's still got some time. James Harden's running out of time.
Yeah, but James Harden gives up. Yeah, like, he gives up at the end of games.
Chris Paul just retired. Chris Paul was up there as well.
Oh, yeah, Chris Paul. Yeah.
But like, other than Chris Paul would probably be the answer.
Chris Paul isn't
one. He never won one. He absolutely deserved one, too. He made one when he was with Phoenix and they played Milwaukee.
Chris Paul wasn't with LeBron when they won the one in the bubble?
No.
He came close.
Oh, that's right. It was Rondo.
With the Rockets. Yeah. He came close with the Rockets.
Yeah, came close with the Rockets, close with the Suns, but no, not he never won one.
Are the Knicks have a chance at all against the winner that comes out of the West?
I mean, with the way that they're shooting, if they continue to shoot lights out the way that they have, they absolutely have a shot. Like, when you're shooting that well, like, you have a chance to beat anybody. But I think the way that they've been shooting is way above their head. And now with this long layoff, it feels like they're due for a little bit of regression. Like, they're talented enough to make it a series, but I'm probably still taking any team out of the West.
It's interesting. The layoff, they had a long layoff after they beat the Sixers.
Yeah, it didn't matter then.
But they almost lost game one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they weren't ready to go. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, and that, if they would have lost game one, this might be a different series.
I still would have picked them even if they had lost game one, but obviously, it wouldn't have gone as poorly as it did. Like, the Cavs gave up at the end of game three. Completely gave up.
Did you see Donovan Mitchell, like, ripping into the team yesterday?
And they just didn't care.
And no one
cared.
They're
all just sitting there, like, nodding. Nobody cared.
I love Donovan Mitchell. And the one thing that I was talking to Ted about is that this has given us a better indication of who the dogs are. Like, who the people, because we keep hearing these people like James Harden saying, you know, I still think we're the better team. When you have a guy like Donovan Mitchell come out and not only scream at your team, even though you know you've lost, just so you can save some face, and then afterwards you're like, yeah, we were ass, and that was unacceptable to our fans. It almost makes it so much easier to find the diamonds in the rough that you want on the court at the end of a game.
Atkinson should just watch Donovan Mitchell. Just watch how he handled that press conference. Yep. Be like, okay, that's how I'm going to do it. I'm not going to reference analytical numbers and all that. Like, nope. Just take some accountability.
That is the worst. That might be one of the worst things I've ever heard a coach say.
Horrible.
Like, you were down 3-0, and you said, well, you know, in reality, analytically, we really won all three. I mean, or at least 2 out of 3.
It is
fascinating, I'll give you that much.
How many coaches are going that way now.
Oh, it's the way it is.
Embiid's process kind of started this. It's all about the analytical process of getting to where you want to be. Happy time.
And he's been in the league for a while as an assistant coach. Like,
yeah.
He's previously been a head coach, and he's like almost 60 years old. Like, I get it, like the Missoulas, the J.J. Redicks, like those younger coaches really lean into it. Like, if you listen to a J.J. Redick press conference, oh, man, he's like expected shot, expected points, like all these numbers, he's just rattling them off. It's kind of fascinating.
I know you're looking confused.
But that one, yeah, don't get it.
I know I'm blowing your mind because I'm way on this intellectual level, way up here, and you guys are just these plebeians. You're reading your coloring books. You've got your ink pen from Mr. Mystery solving the battleship game, and I'm sitting up here blowing your mind with MIT-level stats, you dummies.
Maybe get him on the panel there at Harvard or MIT with Jalen. Oh, yeah. Let them two guys talk about it.
Right. Just sound like a guy who just hit himself in the head with a pan. Like, that was the dumbest thing you could possibly say. It was word salad. It was word salad. And he was trying to sound smart, but he couldn't have sounded dumber.
And he was not fired. It's unbelievable. And he would say that and get your job.
I don't root for anyone to really get fired. I don't. I don't root for it. But I don't know how you can be an organization and hear that and go, this is a leader of men.
That's our guy.
Right? This is a guy.
I wonder if they look at like the year-by-year growth, though, because they make the second round in his first year. They make the conference finals this year. Maybe they're looking at that and they're like, okay, you know, like, and they've also won, like, what, they won 64 games the year before.
They're
going to
slingshot
this year.
They're
slingshotting as well. Actually, no, they have the most expensive roster in basketball, I believe.
Oh yeah. I guess that makes sense.
James Harden.
And they're going to keep on doing it for James Harden then. All right, Terp, great stuff, my
nice
man.
Job,
all right,
Terp.
Guys.
Sorry about the funeral that you will be attending at Fenway Park over the next several days.
Let's get the bats going. It's nice out. They've been waiting for the nicer weather.
It's so nice. It's like, I want to watch good baseball.
If Isaiah Kiner-Falefa hit that wall ball double that Connor Wong got thrown out today, that's a home run. That's a walk-off win. Biggest swing of the season. Now it's nicer weather.
All right. We'll be right back.
And I know you're looking confused.